Hello and thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight. I'm Nick Blumberg. Brandis Friedman has the evening off. Here's what we're looking at.
The former president, Donald Trump, is an abuser.
Local reaction after Donald Trump is invited to speak at a black journalists convention this week in Chicago. Our Spotlight Politics team on that and more. And a high number of tornadoes have hit Illinois already this year. A look at the role climate change may play. And now to some of today's top stories. Activists and family members demand justice for Sonia Massey. The 36-year-old Springfield resident was shot and killed earlier this month by Sangamon County Sheriff's Deputy Sean Grayson. Reverend Al Sharpton and civil rights attorney Ben Crump, who's representing Massey's family, are in town for the rally in West Garfield Park. Grayson was fired after the shooting. Advocates had planned to push back on a grievance filed by the Illinois FOP Labor Council to get Grayson reinstated. But hours ago, that organization said it had decided not to pursue the challenge, noting that it's standard to file a grievance swiftly pending further review. The council says in a statement, quote, "Our obligations under the collective bargaining agreement and to our members do not take away from the sympathy we feel for the family and loved ones of Sonia Massey. Our thoughts and prayers are with them and with all those impacted by this tragedy." Illinois state universities need $1.4 billion in additional public funding to meet their mission. That was the message from lawmakers, university presidents, and advocates today who say state schools aren't meeting the needs of students of color and low-income students. Legislators have just filed a bill calling for a data-driven approach to funding public universities, allocating money based on the needs of students and the schools where they're enrolled. The bill comes after a multi-year study of the state's public university system that found major disparities and equity gaps.
The state's current funding system is broken. It does not consider student needs or universities' realities or state priorities. Instead, it is largely a political-driven process that entrenches historic inequities. We do not need to further any more studies. We do not need any more commissions. The data has told us the truth. We need action.
Lightfoot says the proposal would boost public funding by $135 million additional dollars each year for the next 10 years. Disgraced singer R. Kelly wants the Supreme Court to review his sexual abuse conviction. Kelly was convicted in 2022 of three counts related to child pornography and enticement, stemming from his abuse of his then 14-year-old goddaughter and other minors in the late 90s and early 2000s. His defense attorneys claim the charges were barred by the statute of limitations, a claim that a federal appeals court has previously rejected. Last week, Kelly's lawyers filed a petition for the nation's highest court to take up the case. Kelly is currently in prison in North Carolina, serving a 30-year sentence for a federal conviction in New York. Up next, Illinois takes on tornadoes. That's right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Jim and Kay Mabee family, the Polk Brothers Foundation, and the support of these donors.
Illinois is still assessing the damage after a series of severe storms hit the state 2 weeks ago. The National Weather Service in Chicago has so far reported 31 tornadoes, surpassing the previous daily record of 22 measured just last year. While there's debate over how these storms should be defined, researchers are looking into the factors leading to extreme weather and how to protect communities. Joining us with more on this are Scott Collis, a scientist and department head at the Argonne National Laboratory, and Trent Ford, the Illinois state climatologist. Thank you both for joining us and welcome back to Chicago Tonight. Scott, I'd like to start with you, please. Are we better able to predict tornadoes, or is it more that we can sort of identify the ingredients that fuel them?
The answer is both. New technology from the National Weather Service, including advanced Doppler radar, dual polarimetric radar, and new worn-on forecast technologies that are currently being developed allow us to both detect and predict what kind of storms are going to lead to the kind of conditions that produce the tornado outbreak that occurred in Chicago around July 15th.
So we can sort of see these ingredients in the making and be able to warn folks.
That's correct. And you know, people, there's this misconception that more tornadoes happen in the U.S. than anywhere else in the world. We're just very good at detecting them and very, very good at warning for them.
Now, Trent, you know, storms of this severity, should we be expecting more and more of these in the coming years? Or was this a particularly rare storm system that we saw?
Yeah, Nick, I mean, I think both can be true. This was an extreme event, as you mentioned, the largest single-day tornado outbreak for the Chicago County Warning Office. Extreme, no matter what the record is. But when we look at things like climate change, the connection between climate change and things like extreme heat, extreme cold, they're pretty clear, and they're easy to make those connections. When it comes to really severe weather, like what we saw with this kind of storm, storms that create tornadoes, hail, those connections are a bit less clear. What we do see is that over the last 30, 40 years, we have seen trends of increasing tornado activity, especially east of the Mississippi River, particularly in the Mid-South, but coming up in the Midwest as well. Now, whether or not that's due to climate change is something, a connection that needs to be solidified, as well as looking at projections into the future. So as models get more advanced, as computational methods get more advanced, we're able to see more and more of those connections. And we're starting to research over the last 10 years, starting to elucidate some of those connections, that there may be some connection between tornado frequency, especially in the Midwest and Mid-South, and climate change. But I think a lot more work needs to be done to really solidify what that actually means. And certainly when we look at for community planning over the next several decades, you know, what that means for storms like what we saw on July 15th.
Yeah, and what more would you be looking for, Trent? You know, what more work needs to be done that might help us understand that question a little bit better?
Yeah, so just to use a terrible analogy, the tools that we use when we're looking at projections of climate change, of what to expect in the future, we can think of those as kind of broad-scale tools, like a hatchet, for example. And when we look at something like a tornado or a tornado-producing system, oftentimes it's very fine-scale processes that lead to that. So it's something that really requires more of a scalpel kind of look. So right now, scientists are using a hatchet for something that requires more of a scalpel. What that means is that we got to get down our models and our computation to get down to the scales and the processes that are actually driving these storms. And that's what we're looking for. And more we're able to get close to there. Actually, Scott can tell you about all the work they're doing at Argonne with supercomputing and other modeling systems to try to get down to that scale. The advancements made over the last 10 years are unprecedented. I expect those advancements to accelerate in the next 10 years. So our research is getting better and better. But I wouldn't say that relationship or that connection between climate change and tornadoes, tornado activity in the U.S. is so clear that we can make statements to say we'll expect more of July 15th in the future, for example.
Well, I am not a science guy, so even if it's a bad analogy, I will absolutely take it. What about that, Scott? I mean, what sort of work could we be doing? Things like AI maybe playing a role in the modeling here?
Absolutely. So kind of building off what Trent said is as we kind of zoom in further and further, we start to resolve these features more. The larger the feature, the easier it is to build that connection to climate change. Hurricanes, easy. Heat waves, easy. Large storms that can produce tornadoes, kind of easy. It all comes down to warmer air holds more water. If you increase the temperature of air by 1 degree Celsius, 1.8 degree Fahrenheit, the amount of water it can hold goes up by 7%. Tornadoes and the thunderstorms that make tornadoes love moisture. They need that moisture to persist. When it comes to a city like Chicago, and by the way, we've busted the you do not get tornadoes in a city myth a couple of ways now.
I grew up believing it, but wrong I was.
Not only do we need to have higher resolutions, so we basically a better digital camera gives you more detail, we also need to build new physics into the climate models. We need to understand the physics of cities, the physics of these small-scale structures, the physics, frankly, of how the lake interacts with the city as well. And that's, you know, what Argonne and other groups, including the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, are doing, is taking those new measurements to build the new physics into that computer code that runs on our Aurora supercomputer.
Well, and speaking of, you know, extreme heat, which we've been talking about, tornadoes get a lot of attention, but extreme heat, which we know is driven by climate change, is pretty deadly. I mean, what kind of an impact does that have in a place like Chicago?
Yeah, it's extreme heat. It's not going to make a blockbuster movie like Twisters because it happens slow and it's very insipid. But in the 30 years up to 2022, around about 76 people a year are killed by tornadoes. Over 170 people a year are killed by extreme heat. And extreme heat, discriminates because it will go after the most vulnerable populations, those without access to air conditioning, those that cannot take rest breaks, and those with underlying comorbidities at the same time.
Yeah. Well, in Trent, there were no deaths during this month's storms. You know, how important are the tracking and warning systems we have? And in particular, what's the potential risk if they lose government funding, as some have proposed?
Yeah, so this is really important. What, you know, Scott mentioned movies. Maybe some folks have gone out and seen Twisters, right? And those kind of movies paint a doomsday sort of scenario. But what we had a few Mondays ago was close to that. I mean, we had dozens, literally dozens of tornadoes in the Chicagoland area at night when people are more vulnerable, with a fast-moving system, meaning that the warning time was less than it would be for a typical kind of slower-moving storm system. And yet there were no deaths. And that's not a coincidence. That's not some sort of miracle. That's the work of resources and research and just the hard work of folks in the National Weather Service and county and state emergency management. And it's those kind of events like what we had a couple weeks ago that really show the value of investments in those services, particularly the National Weather Service. So, you know, when we get nice days like sort of what we've had today a little bit, but, you know, those nice days when you don't think about the weather too much, we can take those services for granted. But it's really important that we dedicate the resources and the appreciation to the National Weather Service that it deserves, because when we have another event like what we had a couple weeks ago, we want to make sure that those warnings are accurate, they're timely, and they can get us safe. And that's exactly what happened on Monday, or last Monday. And so making sure that we can dedicate those resources to the National Weather Service is paramount. It's these kind of events that really show how important it is.
Scott, we've got about 30 seconds left. I know, you know, lower-income communities are often hit hardest by severe weather like tornadoes. How important is it to try and mitigate that, to protect those Illinoisans?
In a changing climate, it's vital that we have a just transition to climate resiliency, because this was a terrible tornado outbreak, but it's probably one of the worst ones so far. So building resilience, especially when we look at communities who are underserved, building shelters so that they can take shelter during these events going forward is super important.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Scott Collis, Trent Ford, thank you both for joining us. We appreciate it. And up next, this week's Spotlight Politics, so stay with us. Chicago braces for former President Donald Trump's arrival tomorrow to speak at a convention of black journalists. And at the same time that controversial appearance was being announced, Governor J.B. Pritzker appeared on a White Dudes for Harris Zoom call. Already here with all that and more is our Spotlight Politics team, Amanda Vinicky and Heather Sharon. Well, first off, let's get right to it. That surprising announcement just yesterday night that Trump is scheduled to be interviewed at the National Association of Black Journalists convention tomorrow. Here's how Mayor Brandon Johnson reacted to that news.
We're going to be prepared as a city if he decides to actually arrive in Chicago to make sure that the nastiness and the iniquitous formation that he brings, that doesn't stain the soul of Chicago.
So, Heather, there's been plenty of backlash already from NABJ members, from Chicagoans. There's a protest scheduled to coincide with Trump's arrival. You know, what kind of reception has he gotten on previous visits? We're not necessarily his favorite city.
No, he has targeted Chicago a number of times while he was in office. And, of course, before he was elected, he had to cancel a planned rally here in Chicago on the campus of the University of Illinois at Chicago because of massive protests that really erupted around the arena formerly known as the Pavilion. And of course, he only traveled to Chicago once while president back in October of 2019 when he spoke at he gave a speech that really attacked Chicago as being less safe than Afghanistan. Of course, that's false. And he really targeted then Superintendent Eddie Johnson, who skipped that speech in a sort of protest of Trump's attempt to yank millions of dollars in Department of Justice grants from Chicago. And of course, there were massive protests outside Trump Tower during that speech, even though the president did not even spend the night in Chicago. So it's unclear when he will arrive tomorrow, whether he will spend the night at his Trump Tower, but it is clearly going to be a hotbed of activity downtown outside the Hilton Hotel.
Even though this is, of course, different, this isn't a rally. This is speaking to a convention of journalists. And Nick, as you noted, there has been a lot of consternation, even among members, some who feel like this is supposed to be a safe place for conversation and feel attacked. Others who say, hey, wait, this is a newsmaker, a former president, potential next president that we should have an audience with. So there's so much to this story. But as Heather noted, I think definitely gaining a lot of attention here in Chicago. And by the way, this is a huge convention. I mean, we're not talking proportions of the DNC sort of convention, but nonetheless, very highly attended, a huge crowd.
Yeah, going to be very interesting to see how this plays out tomorrow. In other presidential race news, although this isn't traditionally a rally, certainly Trump is in full swing in the campaign. Governor J.B. Pritzker yesterday joined notable names like Jeff Bridges, Mark Hamill, Lance Bass, as well as some rumored VP contenders in that White Dudes for Harris virtual fundraiser. Amanda, what did we hear from the governor?
Yeah, I mean, Nick, I want to hear about, like, Mark Ruffalo, Josh Lyman.
Right.
Oh, wait, I mean Bradley Redford.
Yeah. Josh Groban.
I think that this is one of those sort of situations where Democrats are recognizing that this is a vulnerability, this is a weakness, particularly in the Midwest. Trump is outperforming Kamala Harris, even though she has, the vice president has risen in some recent polls. By the way, polls, we're still a ways out from the election. Let's not pay too much heed to that. But you do need to pay attention to fundraising. This got a whole lot of money raised for the Harris campaign. I think you're seeing that the dudes did abide.
To the tune of $4 million.
And Pritzker had recognized in his remarks, he said, you know, white dudes for anything isn't generally the sort of thing that the governor is going to be on board with. Just really not the vernacular that he uses. And he, in fact, has, I think, gone out of his way to really give support to the notion of Black Lives Matter and that support. So white dude's not always the corner that he's into. But he says that he will do anything that he can for the Harris campaign and to get her elected. And this is part of that.
Well, it really seems like it's an effort to combat this notion that white male voters aren't going to support a female candidate, a woman of Black and South Asian descent. I mean, Heather, do you expect that message to break through?
Sure. And there's a reason why all of the people on the vice presidential shortlists are white Midwestern dudes, to use the vernacular, right? And it's because that vice presidents are typically chosen to fill some sort of gap in the resume of the president or fill some sort of need. And that is clearly an issue. Now, all of us lived through 2016, where a majority of men voted for Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton. And even before sort of President Biden announced he wouldn't run for office, there was a lot of questions about whether a woman could win as president. And this is an attempt by the Harris campaign and her supporters to sort of attack that, but not directly, by using humor and modern technology and sort of realizing that it's kind of uncomfortable, but let's make a joke out of it, and maybe that makes the medicine go down a little bit easier.
And bring in those celebs.
Absolutely. Yes.
Not just white dudes, the dude.
Yes.
Well, as we mentioned earlier, there's a rally for Sonia Massie happening as we speak. There was also a listening session convened by the DOJ last night in Springfield, where we heard from the Sangamon County Sheriff. Here's some of what he told the crowd of some 500 people.
We failed Sonia. We failed Sonia's family and friends. We failed our community. And I stand here today before you with my arms wide open, and I ask for your forgiveness. I ask Miss Massey and her family for forgiveness. I offer up no excuses. What I do is offer our attempt to do better.
And Amanda, you know, Vice President Harris, speaking of, reportedly called the Massey family last week. Is this an indicator of how much national attention this case is getting right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also an indicator of just how really graphic and to most people incredibly horrifying that video was, that there isn't really a lot of room left for debate. I believe that even the union that had been supporting the fired deputy, Sean Grayson, is backing away from trying to get his job firing reversed. So I think it's a recognition of all of that and of calls for change, particularly into what can be done to better vet candidates that are going to be on the streets for trying to protect people that are supposed to be there who you can call, which is exactly what Sonia Massey did. So this is a really tense meeting in Springfield as well, I would like to add. Mm-hmm. And I think that that shows that the continued calls, even though the officer was fired, the appetites of those seeking change are not satisfied.
Yeah, it seems very likely this is far from the last we hear about this. You know, Heather, in other policing-related news, you've been reporting on a dispute between the community's police oversight board and the city's police misconduct agency. A little bit weedy there. What are the details of this story?
Well, I think that the sort of what people need to know is that there are real questions about how the Civilian Office of Police Accountability is conducting misconduct investigations. And we've heard questions raised by Superintendent Larry Snelling, and what happened was that the Community Commission for Public Safety and Accountability, a mouthful, asked the city's watchdog to investigate COPPA, essentially, giving perhaps more credence to Snelling's concerns. Now, we don't know if that evidence is compelling. We don't know what that evidence is, and we don't know whether the Inspector General is going to open an investigation. But for the first time, I think ever, Chicago has a very active police misconduct agency that is now facing real questions about its credibility. One of the issues is that there's really no mechanism for the watchdog to clear COPPA. If she looks at this information and says, you know what, there's not anything here, the city's procedures don't allow that. And whether it will undermine trust in sort of that process, I think, is a real question, especially as we're, 20 days away from the Democratic National Convention, which will just be a massive test for the Chicago Police Department, which, with the arrival of former President Trump, is facing perhaps an additional test, one that they were perhaps a little bit less prepared for.
Amanda, you know, briefly as we wrap up here, you know, Governor Pritzker signed a new birth equity bill, reproductive rights measure into law yesterday. What are the details there?
So this is basically giving additional insurance protections, and this is just for state covered plans. So not all insurance plans, but it does mean that these plans are going to have to cover doulas. They're going to have to cover midwives, lactation services for up to 12 months after birth. And then also, tellingly, it's a big deal that they are going to have to cover all abortion services without insurance and copay. And then, Nick, actually, before time is out, I want to turn a question to you because you did some reporting on another law that the governor recently signed. And this really puts a 2-year moratorium on carbon capture and sequestration. So, a big deal. What does it mean?
Well, the idea here is that, you know, energy producers like ethanol plants, they can capture the carbon that's, you know, otherwise would just be going into the atmosphere, a huge driver of human-caused climate change. It would get pressurized, put into these pipelines, and then sequestered in underground wells. This is something that, you know, some folks see as a huge, you know, potential boon for Illinois, especially because there are some tax incentives involved under, you know, a recent federal law, and also something that can, you know, improve climate change outcomes. But there's a lot of concern from landowners about where these pipelines are going to be placed, whether the sequestration well is too close to the aquifer that you know, provides water for much of central Illinois. 2-year moratorium until we get further federal rules, but I expect this is not going to go away. This is something a lot of people are very interested in. And as always, I'm very interested in talking with the two of you, but we're going to have to leave it there. Amanda Vinicky, Heather Sharone, thank you.
Thank you.
And we're back to wrap things up right after this. And that is our show for this Tuesday night. Don't forget to stay connected with us by signing up for our daily briefing. And you can get Chicago Tonight streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website. That's WTTW.com/news. You can also get the show via podcast and the PBS video app. And be sure to join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Growing calls for justice in the fatal shooting of Sonya Massey by a downstate sheriff's officer. And what you should know about a summer surge in COVID cases with Chicago's public health commissioner. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to recognize its founder and senior partner, Robert Clifford, who ranked number one in the state of Illinois by Super Lawyers Top 10 2024 Illinois Super Lawyers List.